Welcome to another Ag Perspectives podcast. I'm Ron Hayes from the Radio Oklahoma Ag Network and Oklahoma Farm Report. We have been watching closely the developments of this disaster assistance because of the coronavirus pandemic panic and Congress approving $9.5 billion specifically for coronavirus relief. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue held a teleconference on Friday night with reporters, both the traditional trade, agricultural media, as well as general media. He gave an overview of what the program was all about, then took about 25 minutes of questions from the reporters. Here's Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue.
You know, I think more than ever now our country knows where our food comes from. They're depending on our farmers and ranchers to grow and produce that food that we need to live. And I think in times of national emergency such as this, that's become even more apparent. You've heard me say that the food supply chain has been resilient while having to adapt very quickly when food that used to go to restaurants now needs to go to retail outlets. I think when you really think about the fact that about half of our calories are consumed outside the home, that's been a dramatic shift in our consumption patterns. And the misalignment of production and supply has created some real challenges here. As a result, farmers have seen prices in their market supply chain affected by the virus like they never could have expected. But today, this afternoon at the White House, President Trump and I announced a $19 billion program to support the farmers who've been affected by these disruptions and maintain the integrity of our food supply chain. The program is essentially made up of two parts. First, there will be $16 billion in direct payments to our farmers and ranchers who've experienced unprecedented losses during this pandemic. For this portion of the program, our economists and USDA evaluated commodity-specific losses occurring during the mid-January to mid-April timeframe for immediate assistance. This program is open to farmers and ranchers regardless of size or market outlet if they suffered an eligible loss. We've also looked ahead to help provide additional assistance with cost and disruption to markets in the months ahead, not really knowing what the demand destruction would be. We know that the disruption to markets and demand is significant, and these payments will only cover a portion of the impacts on farmers and ranchers. In the second part of the program, USDA is committed to purchase $3 billion in fresh produce, specialty crops, fruits, berries, vegetables, dairy, as well as meat protein to be distributed to Americans in need. This distribution will take in conjunction with the private sector and going to food banks and other nonprofit, faith-based, and community operations there locally. We'll partner, as I indicated, with regional and local distributors whose workforce has been significantly impacted by the closure of many of their customers in restaurants, hotels, and other institutional settings. I do want to thank the President for his unwavering support for America's farmers and ranchers, and I committed to him today that USDA will implement this program as quickly, effectively, and efficiently as we can to provide as direct, quick, immediate financial relief to our farmers and ranchers, but allow for the purchase and distribution of our agricultural surplus to help our fellow Americans in need. And I want to end by saying thank you to all of our food supply chain, but it begins with the farmers who are out there, even now, putting the seed in the ground and growing those crops with not knowing what's going to happen so that we can have enough to eat in the fall. We're so grateful for what all of you do and what the folks across the entire food chain do day in and day out to assure our American families are fed. Megan, I'll now take a few questions, and I think the moderator will give you instructions. We're kind of a little homebrew tonight. We're not in our USDA radio offices, so we'll do the best we can in accommodating you. Thank you very much.
The first question comes from Chris Clayton, and please state your media outlet.
Chris Clayton with DTN, and thank you for taking questions, Secretary. You didn't mention anything regarding potential aid to biofuels, and I'm wondering if you see something coming down the line in the future on that, I guess.
Well, I didn't mention it because it's not included this time. Obviously, there are huge challenges in the biofuel ethanol industry that will affect our farm of corn growers and producers that supply that. But frankly, at this point, there's just not enough money to go around. The demand from all the sectors was even more than we could accommodate at this time. And the macro energy issue is certainly affecting all sectors of energy. So it's just more than we could do from the USDA perspective at this time.
The next question comes from Spencer Chase, and please state your media outlet.
Yeah, good evening. Spencer Chase with AgriPulse. Appreciate you all having this call. I guess sort of a two-part question, if I may. First one being wondering when you anticipate the departments will have checks in the mail on this, and also wondering if there's any additional rationale that the department either has available now or plans to make available in terms of the calculations or how these calculations were developed. Thanks.
Surely. The check in the mail obviously is always a question we should expect, and I will tell you we're going to do it as quickly as possible. I'm pushing our people just like we have on our disaster and MFP payments. Frankly, by the time the rule gets published, the software gets developed and everything, I'm hoping we can get checks by the end of May. It's an arduous process, but we are committed to move out on this as quickly and expeditiously as possible. But I like the date to be sure that we're doing that. Our people really want a date longer than that, but we're going to push them to get these checks out in May.
Next question comes from Siobhan Hughes. Please state your media outlet.
Hi, this is Siobhan Hughes with the Wall Street Journal. I'm interested in what you're doing in terms of getting testing to meat processors, and if you've had any conversations within the administration about prioritizing testing for the processing facilities over testing for, you know, other kinds of businesses.
Well, we have had several conversations, both the CDC, the administration, the employers, the plant owners, as well as the governor and all the local health authorities there. Frankly, it is not the role of the USDA to get the tests. We try to facilitate the connections that we're able and to let people know of the urgent need there. It's our processing facilities, certainly in pork, is critical. It's a just-in-time, very sophisticated, synchronized system, and we cannot afford for these plants to be offline very long. And I think the key to getting the workforce back there is to identify where the positives are and who can come back to work. So we are working on that. That's not a primary USDA function. We are aware of it. We're talking with everyone to secure these, and hopefully we can get these tests at the appropriate plants as quickly as possible so they can get back online.
What has the feedback been so far when you've asked?
Well, the feedback is we obviously are the food supply chain has been labeled as 1A when health and workers are one. So the fact is it's a scramble. There are tests needed in the hot spots of population across the country, but the answer from FEMA and the answer for the people working in that area is that we understand the need and we're going to get them there as quickly as possible.
The next question comes from Jackie Fatka. Please state your media outlet.
Good evening. Jackie Fatka with Seed Stuff and Farm Progress Companies. I was just curious, the CARES Act called for $9.5 billion for the livestock and livestock dairy specialty growers, and then another replenishment for the CCC in that. From the total $19 billion, can you maybe detail how this breaks out from that? And then also, what have you used from the trade mitigation effort to apply how this funding will also be allocated?
Certainly. Let's begin with the $9.5 billion and the COVID response. We had requested, obviously, at least $20 billion initially there with a top-off of replenishment of CCC of $30 billion there. Congress saw fit not to do that. It was in the bipartisan bill that was submitted in the Senate and got removed at some point after partisan discussions in that regard. We are free to use the 9.5 for really all situations. The CCC funds have to be used in particular areas. We don't have the language that we've requested to be free to use those for all of the COVID response. We did decide, because of the immediacy of the need to get this money out as quickly as possible, to use the 9.5 that's appropriated and the 6.5 that we had residual in our CCC account that will allow us to do the $16 billion in direct payments currently. The $14 billion that you may be referring to of CCC replenishment will not be available to us until July, and I felt like it was imperative to move more quickly and get these areas covered for our first quarter losses, because I'm not sure people can hang on long enough until July to wait for that money. But we do anticipate further needs. We'll be looking at second quarter losses as we go forward and have a better data position of knowing what the exact numbers are as we're going forward. I anticipate that we will need additional money.
The next question comes from Stephanie Ebbs. Please state your media outlet.
Oh, hi, good evening. I'm ABC News. I had a question about the logistics of the purchase and distribution program. The release mentioned that they will be, that the products will be distributed in pre-approved boxes. And I'm wondering, that kind of sounded similar to the Harvest Box proposal. I'm wondering if that is consistent with past uses of this kind of aid program and what that will mean for the timeline of getting products from producers to these food banks and other places.
Well, if you don't mind the pun, this is an out-of-the-box example of what we're trying to do. It is new and different. We've never done this before, but in realigning the supply, much of the conversation you heard about milk dumping has been to do with the dual processing system we have in this country. When about half of our calories are consumed outside of the home, you have a whole chain of processing that serves those institutional customers, and the others serve the grocers. That's where most of the misalignment has come from, the dislocation of the supply for those selling in the processors that went into the institutional market had no place for their products. We are working with our private providers such as Sysco and our food service providers and logisticians in that way to help put meat, both protein, both produce, as well as dairy products in those boxes in the packaging, and they're using their workforce to help us deliver prepackaged boxes to the food banks and other distribution centers in order to make it as easy as possible, rather than having the food banks to have workforce to put all those together. They are lacking volunteers, as they tell us now, so we're trying to make it as easy as they can to just to deliver and distribute the boxes that will be delivered to them.
The next question comes from Brian Ulmer. Please state your media outlet.
This is Brian Ulmer from The Barn. Secretary Perdue, thanks for hosting the press conference call this evening and for your work in helping the agriculture industry each and every day, especially during these trying times. But what does the $500 million for other crops include that was stated in the COVID aid relief for ag? Is that is some of that for the hemp industry?
Well, not necessarily. It's for anybody who has damages. You think that you don't see the horticulture listed exactly. You're not sure see a number for sheep or lambs or goats in there. So there will be other extraneous people coming along that we identify as we go forward after the rules, as we develop the rules that we have to accommodate for. So we want to leave some room there for these sectors that will obviously face in agriculture, face some of the same price disruption and decimation that we've seen in other crops. So those are some examples of some of the things that we would have. Hemp growers, if they demonstrate a loss, they'll be considered like other crops.
Next question comes from Jerry Hagstrom. Please state your media outlet.
Yes, I write for the Hagstrom Report and for National Journal and also for DTN. it seems clear that you can't possibly answer all the demands or requests from agriculture from the letters that you have gotten in the last few weeks. What's your assessment of the reports that these various ag groups have sent to you about their losses compared with what you can provide? How does that compare with USDA's assessment of the problems in agriculture at the moment?
Certainly, Jerry, you're aware that many industry sectors will use the highest number they can find to justify, and they'll get economists to do that. We have to rely on our own internal economist, Dr. Rob Johansen at USDA, to estimate, and we try to ground truth that with Fafri, who out of Missouri, who does a good job in ag economy as well, and do that. But you're absolutely correct. We don't know that we don't expect that we've met all the needs. That's why I indicated that I do believe there will be further data as we go along. We're not going to make everyone content with this initial tranche, and many people will feel like it's insufficient, but we're doing everything we can to cover as many people, both smaller farmers as well as larger farmers in that effort, and we'll have to see where the gaps are in order to address later on. But it is regretful, and not that we're going to be able to hit the bullseye every time, but Dr. Johansen did, in retrospect, did a pretty good job with our estimation on MFP payments. This is a little bit different than that. We don't know right now what the demand destruction will be going forward, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to expedite this initial payment and then get more data about what the ultimate demand is regarding how quickly we come out of this, how quickly our restaurants and our institutional settings reopen in order to regain our supply chain.
The next question comes from Dan Charles. Please state your media outlet.
I'm with National Public Radio. A follow-up on this sort of this new alternate supply chain that you're using with companies like Sysco to buy the commodities and transfer them on, package them, send them to the food banks. The food banks, as you mentioned, are short of people these days. Is there any money for them as well to try to, you know, handle this, hire more people, bring more volunteers in, or will the companies like Sysco, do you think they would end up setting up distribution points of their own?
We don't anticipate right now that Sysco or those types of food service deliverers, logistical people will set up distribution of their own. That's probably not out of the realm of possibility, but we're not anticipating that right now. The food banks are known, the known points of distribution. The people who need the food know where they are, and that's the likely source. I think my earlier answer to a question was we hope to prepare these boxes to take a load off of the food banks and their lack of volunteers in order to get the job done. It is my understanding that the CARES Act did provide some funding for their administrative and other efforts into the food bank, and we believe that to be true. We've seen the numbers, and we think that will help them. They do tell us they're short of volunteers just because people are concerned about their own selves, and in that way, that's why we tried to work a program with our institutional food service people in order to be as expedient as possible in helping to deliver this food.
The next question comes from P.J. Huffstutter. Please state your media outlets.
Hi, sir. It's P.J. Huffstutter with Reuters News. Thank you so much for taking calls. I just wanted to follow up actually on the NPR question. Could you, just to get a little bit more clarity, so is it that USDA is going to be funneling the money through the distributors, like through the Syscos, as opposed to going through like the normal procurement process like we saw with MFP?
We may be doing both. Obviously, we can use this private sector system to purchase the produce and then in a reimbursement type of way on our behalf in order to get that to the food banks. That has not probably been fully developed at this point in time. Our agricultural marketing service, which is really our procurement arm of USDA, is working really both channels of how we can efficiently relocate the dislocated supply chain from where there is abundance and waste until to places where that food is needed. So it's going to be a logistical Rubik's Cube, and our AMS people are already working on how to develop the relationships and the protocol and the finances and the essential types of contract points with the food service vendors.
Up next is Jenny Schlecht. Please state your media outlets.
This is Jenny Schlecht with AgWeek Magazine and AgWeek TV. We're hearing a lot from the industry that the problem that they're facing is not just right now, it's with the consolidation of the packing industry. Can you give us any sort of update on the investigation going on into that?
Well, unfortunately, I can in the middle of an investigation. It's not prudent to discuss the findings thus far. We've extended that investigation. I think there's a legitimate concern among growers and cattle people of the divergence that we've seen in retail prices versus live prices there. I plan to probably expand that into a larger task force that we could be inclusive of in a task force type of way to help us understand the marketing and why this occurred. You may recall back at the Holcomb fire that occurred. There has been consolidation in the industry. They've given us some reasons why this divergence takes place. I'm not totally satisfied with all those answers, but I'd love to hear from every sector, including the packing and processing, the growers, the cow-calf operations, as well as the further retailers in that way to help us determine what is a long-term solution to this effort. You know, we've also been involved with the Commodity Futures Trading Commission in order to help us get more transparency and convergence between our futures prices and our live cattle prices. To use that tool, use futures tool, there's the convergence, or it doesn't mean anything. So we're going to continue to explore. I'm sorry I can't give you any interim type of data right now, but we are continuing and extending that, and we'll welcome input from the various sectors along that supply chain of cattle.
The next question comes from Larry Lee. Please state your media outlet.
Brownfield Ag News Network. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. You talk about the supply chain disruptions, about companies like Sysco repackaging for the food banks. Is there anything USDA is doing or can do with this new program to help coordinate with industries and states to identify processors or packagers and move some product to places that can get it to the consumer a little better? I know in Wisconsin we've got a checkoff program working with state ag department, moving some milk that was to be dumped to a bottler and then off to a food bank. Is there some way that the federal government can help coordinate some of things like that? Thank you.
If I haven't been clear in my explanation, I've tried to explain that's exactly what we're trying to do, utilize and partner with the private sector with all the potential out there to match these oversupply and underutilization together in doing that. That's what the Agricultural Marketing Service has been doing with our supply chain of the food service suppliers. Obviously, we would welcome people doing this on a local or regional basis when they see a need of how surplus milk, rather than being dumped, could be utilized, even if it's the milk solids there. And we would welcome any other participation from the private sector in doing that. But I guess I've tried to describe that's what we are trying to do at USDA, is to facilitate these partnerships rather than being in the middle of everything, helping people to work together to meet one another's needs.
Next question comes from Rick Barrett. Please state your media outlet.
Yes, hi. Thanks for doing the call tonight. I'm with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And the question I have, please, Mr. Secretary, is Some of the farm groups were asking for a reopening of the dairy margin coverage program and also for some type of short-term supply management in dairy. Could you explain, please, why you decided not to include those in this package?
Well, first of all, the supply management is a much longer, more serious contemplation and question that way. It also was very expensive in that regard. Regarding the other part of your question that dealt with, what was the first part? Can you open that up again? Okay, the dairy margin coverage, I'm sorry. On the dairy margin coverage, we chose not to do that because although it was a big request, that is an insurance program. And we literally begged people to sign up last year when Congress did a wonderful, generous thing for dairy farmers in the Farm Bill, allowing them to retroactively in 2019 go back from January 1. The Dairy Margin Coverage Program is a insurance program, just like the safety net for crops. It doesn't make any sense to have an insurance program and allow people to retroactively decide to have coverage at whether they need it after they need it. That violates a principle. It only trains people to not take the insurance as they should and then apply for ad hoc disaster or subsidies later on when prices go down. So I feel very strongly about the principal insurance here. We chose to identify dairy people in other ways rather than reopen the dairy margin coverage program retroactively.
We have time for one more question.
That comes from Jacob Albrecht. Please state your media outlet.
KWCH-TV in Wichita, Kansas. Thank you, Secretary, for answering some questions. A couple parts of that. The 9.5 specific to the livestock, if it's being used elsewhere now, will that amount that was set aside come back to them with the low prices they've been seeing? And the other part, quite simply, will there be paperwork for farmers and ranchers to fill out, or do you and the department have the information you'll need to determine those payment amounts?
Well, I don't want to be too facetious, but does anything happen in the federal government without paperwork? You know, yes, there will be applications that both the crops will be able to go into. Those that are registered FSA will be applying for these payments, justifying, self-certifying, and demonstrating their damage in the FSA offices. Those who do not have a history on the produce, especially crops, will probably be handled through the Ag Marketing Service, through the PACA-like program, the perishable agricultural commodity program in that way. That these are people that are not used to participating in farm programs, and they will make application into the Agricultural Marketing Service to justify and document their losses. While we are very compassionate toward those that are lost, we also have a fiduciary responsibility to maintain the integrity of these programs, and we expect to be audited by the OIG in the years to come to make sure how well we did that. So while we want an honor system that helps us move quickly, we've got to have a program that also ensures that federal taxpayer dollars are used wisely and without fraud in that regard. So we will be setting up a program that does that to the best of our ability.